Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Peck, also host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago, following all 82 Bulls games this season. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls_Peck. You can follow my co-host Jordan Malley at Jordan C. Malley, and you can follow us at Locked On Bulls. Send us an email, lockedonbulls@gmail.com. You can also send us a message on Facebook, facebook.com/lockedonshybulls. And of course, our text and voicemail line is always there for you, our fellow Bulls fans, 331-979-1369. That number again, 331-979-1369 for all of your Bulls thoughts, questions, inquiries, comments. We will get to mailbag content later in the week, so keep those Bulls thoughts coming. We appreciate everyone who uses that text and voicemail line. Jordan out today. I will be holding down the fort. Hope everybody out there had a great Thanksgiving. Found some things to be thankful for outside of being a Bulls fan, because not a whole lot to be thankful for as a Bulls fan right now, sadly. But we are a quarter of the way through the season. Kind of hard to believe. The Bulls are 6-14, 20 games in. And Bulls fans are not happy. We were not promised a product better than this, but we were certainly expecting a product better than this. So I thought for today's show, as we gear up for the next phase two of this, you know, four-phase long season we have, to kind of highlight what I think to be some of the biggest issues with this team right now after their very poor start to the first quarter of the season. To me, the player performance issue, which of course Jim Boylan, this team's head coach, and of course management above him, would like to put a significant amount of blame on, is players underperforming, and there is some truth to that. The most obvious guilty party, sadly, is Lauri Markkanen. Zach LaVine, for his part, has had some good games and some bad games. He's had some phenomenal games. And yes, his defense has not improved the way that we wanted to believe it would after all of the talk this offseason about him working on that element to his game. Still has issues in this defensive system. You know, we all know his weaknesses, especially when he kind of loses focus, guarding off the ball, gets lost, has lapses on the defensive end. That is still a problem with Zach, but at least for the most part, he is bringing it offensively. I mean, this was another night, last Friday's game against Portland, their second loss to Portland in the span of a week, where if Zach doesn't show up, it's ugly. Zach poured in 28 points. 5 of 11 from behind the three-point line, 7 of 10 at the free throw line. Zach is at least doing his part offensively. Lauri Markkanen is not. This is a reason, to me, that this team is so underwhelming right now. We were expecting, and we were told, that the reasons for optimism were we went out and signed the right guys and added the right guys in the offseason who we believe could complement Lauri Markkanen, along with Zach LaVine, to help build them into the stars that every NBA team needs to be competitive. It was all about internal development. John Paxson saying specifically, we need Zach LaVine to become a better basketball player. We need Lauri Markkanen to become a better basketball player. And Zach's numbers are actually down from last season's so far, but Lauri's are worse. Lauri's are much, much worse. This dude's averaging like 13 points a game. His field goal percentages, both inside and outside the three-point line, are atrocious. Something's wrong with his shot, and he looks very soft and very weak and not at all a threat when he tries to put the ball on the floor and get to the basket. We've continued to see him try to go to that drag step, but it's not a very aggressive take, and he's not even really hitting that with as much regularity as he hit it last season. And he is playing in an offensive system that I think allows a not aggressive player to get lost a lot of the time. And we'll get to that system a little bit later on, but some of it is on Lauri, unquestionably. And, you know, sometime in recent months, our listeners have come at Jordan and I and called us, you know, like Lauri defenders, and you know, people are being too critical of Zach LaVine, and not enough blame is going on Lauri because he's clearly underperforming. And as much as I wanted to believe in Lauri being a cornerstone for this franchise after the Jimmy trade, what we're seeing right now is anything but that. We got people talking about sending Lauri to the G League to try to get his confidence back. Or at the very least, benching him, bringing him off the bench, making him play with the second unit, because right now he's giving you next to nothing. In Friday night's loss to Portland, he did not score in the first half. And this was a guy who many of us were hoping could take a leap to becoming an all-star or a near all-star caliber player this season because of the performances we saw from him as a rookie and a second-year player. So, you know, people are speculating wildly as to what the hell's going on with Lauri Markkanen. I joked on our Outsider show Friday night that maybe it has something to do with his recent turn to veganism, explaining at least some element of his weakness. And that's just mostly just a cynical comment from a rabid carnivore like myself. But something's up. Maybe it has something to do with this weird, you know, elevated heart rate problem that we found out about Lauri at the back end of last season, when a lot of people thought, myself included, the Bulls were just being overly cautious in a season when, at the back end of things, losses is what the team needed. So shut Lauri down. But maybe there is something there. But, you know, that's where we are. We're trying to find these different answers for why Lauri would be struggling so badly, because it is apparent, it is evident, it is too glaringly gross to ignore that he is performing as one-tenth of the player that we believe he could be so far this season. And obviously Lowry's frustrated. You could tell from his post-game comments, and he's trying to maintain some kind of level of positivity through all of this, but something is wrong. And he does not look like the strong player we believed him to be. He does not even look like the 7-foot three-point shooter that we knew him to be with his terrible percentages so far this season. So when you look at what is troubling this Bulls team and why they have gotten off to a 6-14 start, when it comes to player production on the floor every night, there are plenty of guilty parties across this roster and this rotation that are underperforming based on our expectations. But the biggest culprit, unquestionably, is Lauri Markkanen. And that is a very sad reality. And I don't know how he fixes it. I don't know how the Bulls fix it moving forward. Want to give our friends and sponsors at Audible a quick shout out. Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment. Start listening with a 30-day Audible trial. Choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA. And if you're listening on the go or you can't visit Audible right now, you can find this offer and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcasts.com/offers. So, moving along, what are the other key issues that are wrong with this team and the reasons for their 6-14 start and the key issues that will remain moving forward for the Bulls this season as we hit the one-quarter mark? Lauri Markkanen obviously being a big problem as far as player performance on the court. But I mentioned that I think part of the problem, as Bulls fans are trying to come up with a million different hypotheticals for what's wrong with Lauri, one of the very real problems with Lauri right now is this system that he's playing in. And that, coupled with his demeanor on the court of not being an overly aggressive player who demands the ball. Because there is no pecking order, wink, wink, in this offense right now. And Jim Boylan doesn't believe there needs to be. Obviously, Zach is your 1A guy taking the most shots. And behind Zach, the person on this roster with the most field goal attempts per game is not Lauri Markkanen, it's Kobe White off the bench. And yeah, we've seen some dazzling performances from Kobe on, you know, a random night here or there, but he has largely looked like the inconsistent rookie that I expected him to be. Which is why I think Bulls fans clamoring for Kobe to be starting are misguided. It should be Lauri taking the second most shots every night, and not like you need to mandate it and, you know, etch it in stone in a rule book at the Advocate Center, but there should be a pecking order on this offense. But Boylan is doing this, you know, free-flowing multi-ball handler system, just find the open shot when you have it. And how many times down the floor do Bulls fans have to watch Lauri just sitting somewhere around the perimeter, watching, not engaged in this offense whatsoever? I mean, it's hilarious that after Lauri went scoreless in the entire first half in their most recent game Friday night, we all had to take note of the fact that the first time down the floor to start the second half, they purposefully went to Lauri to try to get him a shot. He had a shot blocked, but it was like, well, at least they tried to get Lauri the ball there, try to get him going to start the second half. It's absurd that that's something that we had to notice, because it's absurd that he did not score in the first half. And I think a lot of this is, I said before, some of the blame falls on Lauri for underperforming and this shooting slump that he's in, and he's not being aggressive. But this system that Boylan is using is certainly not doing Lauri any favors. And it's not like Lauri is the only example of players regressing rather than developing under Boylan. But he is the most, he is the most obvious example. And how hard would it be to just dedicate a certain percentage of your offense to playing a two-man game between Lauri and Zach? Because we've seen it. We know that they haven't shared the floor a whole lot in their first couple of seasons because of injuries to both players, and that their, you know, their chemistry development was kind of an issue in the early going. But there were times last season when we saw Zach and Lauri play a two-man game very effectively. And there are a lot of different ways and a lot of different avenues just from that simplistic two-man game that you could use. And the Bulls aren't using it right now. Jim Boylan is not using it right now. And between that and Lauri being content to be a spot-up shooter, 50% of Lowry's attempts so far have come behind the three-point line. And that is not good, and we know it can be better. We know he can score in different ways. We saw it in the first game of the season. Lauri dropped 35 points in the season opener, and only 3 of those points came from behind the three-point line. 3 of 35. So we know that Lauri is capable of scoring inside the three-point line. Get to the free throw line, get some looks at the basket. For whatever reason, his confidence is shook. His shot is off. He doesn't look strong attacking the basket, and he's not getting calls. And some of this is on Lowry to fix, but some of it is on Jim Boylan to fix. And Jim Boylan deserves a significant amount of blame for the fact that Lowry right now looks like a shell of himself. Because you should be playing a system that highlights the strengths of your best players, and that's not what Jim's doing. Jim's doing the opposite. Not to mention the fact that, you know, he's putting Lowry on the bench for these long stretches while he makes sure that his entire bench gets 20 minutes a night, which for a team this lacking in talent on the back end of the roster makes absolutely no sense. And Jim Boylan says, well, it's because we like to play this fast-paced game and, you know, we like to make our opponents run up and down the floor a lot, and because of that, we got to keep fresh legs in there. Dude, no. No. That's not a good enough reason to justify playing 20-plus minutes for guys like Archie Diakono and, you know, and honestly, even like Chris Dunn off the bench. Now, we've seen Jim Boylan adjust his rotations a little bit recently. Like, Cornette came back from the sinus thing and then played Wednesday night and looked awful. So, Boylan went back to Gafford on Friday night. And during the absence of Otto Porter Jr. and now the absence of Chandler Hutchison, and the Bulls' wing depth is becoming a glaring issue, he originally was going to Shaq Harrison, you know, his favorite teacher's pet alongside Ryan Archie Diakono, as a starter, playing that three-guard lineup with Shaq Harrison in there in the starting lineup. Then all of a sudden, Friday night, Shaq Harrison is a DNP, nowhere to be found, and Denzel Valentine is getting minutes off the bench, and Chris Dunn is in the starting lineup. Now, I don't think that that's the best way to go moving forward. I mean, at the very least, and as hard as I am on Valentine and have been recently, just because the dude can't stay on the floor, and I thought that, you know, the fact that he was theoretically healthy and Boylan couldn't play him at all was kind of amusing. And, you know, if you're not going to play him even when he's healthy, what the hell's he doing on this roster? At least now on Friday night, we saw a couple of things change with Jim. And you wonder if it was his decision or somebody above him making that decision to say, hey, man, we know you love Shaq. We know you love the energy he brings you on the defensive end. But the second unit is really struggling offensively. Because we got to listen to Jim Boylan say, well, you know, that three-guard lineup that he loves to use, it actually has a plus rating among all of these different lineups Boylan's using. The Archie, Kobe, Chris Dunn trio has one of the better ratings of any threesome on this Bulls roster. That's not ideal, and it's mostly because of their defensive performance, but it's so lacking on the offensive end. If Kobe White's not hot, and there are plenty of nights when he's not, that unit gives you nothing offensively. And so Jim Boylan says things like, well, you know, our offensive unit had struggling getting stops tonight, but then, you know, our second unit, our defense unit, was really strong defensively, but they couldn't score. Well, if Kobe White's not hot, who's scoring when you're playing that rotation? So you wonder if Jim Boylan is going to continue to make any other significant changes to this rotation, which I believe first thing he should do is shorten it. There is no reason all these bench guys should be getting close to the same number of minutes as your starters. It makes no sense. And you also need to consider, strongly consider, changing the way you're doing things on both ends of the floor. Change things offensively to get Lowry Markkanen going. Do everything you can to try to help Lowry get out of whatever slump this is that he's enduring. Also, how about you lengthen the leash on Wendell Carter Jr. a little bit? We saw Wendell take, like, you know, a mid-range, you know, 16, 18-foot or whatever in their loss on Friday night in the second half of the game. He made it. Shot looked great. Stroke looked great. And I was sitting there, you know, in the green room at NBC with Big Dave and John being like, oh, my God, look. We saw Wendell take a wide-open mid-range shot and knock it down. But it was like the first time all season we saw that. 20 games in. So these are adjustments that Jim Boylan should be obviously making that he's not. And then, of course, not only changing things up on the offensive end, but the defense, which Jim has been very firm, almost defiantly saying, we're not going to change the way we play defense. Look at our defensive numbers. And yeah, the Bulls are a middle-of-the-pack team defensively, ratings-wise, but a lot of that is just the Bulls and their you know, league leading, or last time I checked, league leading number in forcing turnovers. And that helps a lot in your team's defensive rating. But if you're not consistently making teams pay after you force those turnovers, and you're also simultaneously getting cooked in transition defense when you're the team backpedaling, which has been the case so far, and your half-court defense is a disaster, then don't talk to me about, well, you know, look at our defensive rating and look at the, you know, the numbers that we're doing creating turnovers. Well, okay, you're also giving up plenty of points every night, and you're aggressive blitzing and double-teaming the ball handler out of the gate, and your roster's inability to play that style of defense with the rotations after the initial rotation is exposing you. Not to mention the fact that Jim Boylan's defense is drawing his bigs, namely Wendell Carter Jr., away from the rim where he could excel as a rim protector and shot blocker. And you are essentially having guards try to come in and rotate to protect the paint because of your defensive system. And it also leaves itself open to smart players who are capable of scoring from the mid-range area, which, no, it's not entirely dead in the NBA. Look at what Carmelo Anthony did to us twice in 1 week. Exposing mismatches and exposing open looks because of the defense that Jim Boylan is insisting on running. It's not smart. And him insisting that they need to keep playing that way, we got to keep doing what we're doing, is essentially what we heard him say after another loss on Friday night. But what you're doing on both ends of the floor right now ain't working. So that, to me, is one of the biggest issues of this team. A head coach who is refusing to adapt to situations that are putting his players in position not to succeed, but to fail. And there's no sign of that changing, other than a couple glimpses of Jim, you know, shuffling up the back end of his rotation Friday night, mostly just because this team is very thin at a certain position right now, and he's trying to adapt to that. But for the failings of the players themselves, right now, through this Bulls fan's eyes, the failings of the head coach are far more apparent, and they're far more damaging. And they are also responsible for some of the failings of the players on the court. And that is the big issue. Which, of course, leads us to the really, truly biggest issue for this team at the quarter mark through the season. And it is the relationship that exists between this team's head coach and this team's management and this team's ownership. So, what is the biggest problem for these 6-14 Bulls as we hit the quarter mark of year three on this rebuild? Well, essentially it's that the talent that they got in the Jimmy Butler trade when they decided to tear down and start over is right now looking like it's not good enough. And they're already on the second coach of this rebuild. And the second coach that they chose, without a coaching search, looks like a worse coach than the first coach they had to kick off this rebuild. And now they're stuck. There were plenty of Bulls fans who never thought they should have traded Jimmy, that was a bad trade. Some fans were hesitant. I probably would put myself in that category because we wanted to see what we had with Zach and Lowry and Chris Dunn. And after the first early returns, especially what we saw from Lowry his rookie year, and then especially what we saw from Zach LaVine last season, there were some of us skeptics who were saying, actually, the Bulls may have won that trade. When you consider the potential ceilings for Zach and Lowry, even if Chris Dunn, you know, turned out to be kind of a dud part of that trade, the combined talent ceilings of Zach and Lowry, plus not having to overpay an aging Jimmy Butler with a lot of miles on his legs, combined to say, hey, maybe the Bulls won that trade. Oh, wow. Yeah, I think the Bulls did win that trade. Well, now, those of us who believed after some, you know, some evidence that maybe they did win that trade are now 20 games into year three saying, oh my God, maybe they didn't win that trade. Because look at what Jimmy Butler is doing down in Miami. Yeah, he's a diva, and yeah, he's a head case, and yeah, he can be a locker room problem. He was here. He was in Minnesota. He was in Philadelphia. But if he is the top dog, as he is in Miami, and he plays the way he's playing now with complimentary pieces around him, right now it looks like you can at least build a semi-contending-looking team, a pretty decent team, especially for being in the Eastern Conference, with Jimmy at the helm. And yeah, the three alphas disaster was a disaster, and probably, you know, what led the Bulls to decide to blow things up. But did they really think that putting Rondo and Wade around Jimmy was the right basketball personnel? I mean, maybe part of them did, but maybe what they really wanted was to put butts in the seats and to sell some jerseys, namely with Wade signing. But if, like, anyone who has watched basketball for a significant, you know, part of their life could have looked at those signings to say, if you're really trying to build a team around Jimmy, you could not have made stupider signings than those ones. So the poor results and them also being afraid of that Jimmy Supermax that was right around the corner is what led them to make that trade and to blow it up and start over. But right now, based on what we're seeing in year three of this rebuild, overpaying an aging Jimmy Butler looks like it would have been a better decision than what we have right now. They didn't want to be stuck in mediocrity. That's what they said. And overpaying an aging Jimmy to eat up a huge percentage of your salary cap and trying to build around him, in their eyes, would have led to nothing but mediocrity. And that is a fair argument to make by them in the time. There is, I mean, you could make the counter argument that, whatever, Jimmy is a top 20 player in the league. He earned the Supermax. Pay him the Supermax. And, oh, gee, maybe if you need to go a little bit into the luxury tax to bring in other talent to play with Jimmy, you do that, Reinsdorfs. Because we've constantly heard their party line in this mom-and-pop shop-run organization, even though it's in the third largest market in the league, is we'll pay the luxury tax if we are in a spot to contend and it makes sense to pay it. But we're not going to go into the luxury tax for a team that's not competing. Well, if you pay Jimmy a Supermax and he can convince other players to come play with him in supporting roles, and you need to pay those players and you need to go into the luxury tax to pay those players, then maybe you should have done that. Because right now, the talent that we got to start over after trading Jimmy collectively doesn't look like it is close to what the production of Jimmy Butler gives you. And so now, Lauri Markkanen is in some kind of horrible slump and underperforming. Zach LaVine is a mixed bag of good and bad, and largely because of that, you could draw the logical conclusion that he is, with his athletic talent and his ability to shoot and his ability to drive, he can be a guy who can explode for 30, 40, even close to 50 points a night, as we have seen already this season. But the fact that he's not doing it every night, and the fact that he still makes these, you know, these face-palming mistakes at times, is evidence that he should not be the 1A guy on a realistically contending team. Even a middle-of-the-pack team that's fighting for a back-end playoff spot. He should be the second, or dare I say maybe even third option on a really good team. That's what Zach LaVine looks like. Lauri Markkanen, right now at least, looks like a guy who should be fighting for minutes at the back end of a rotation on a good team. If that. And the coach who was tagged to alter this rebuild halfway through year two to give the, you know, the necessary competitive spirit and fighting spirit that in the eyes of the Reinsdorfs and John Paxson was lacking under Gar Forman's guy, Fred Hoiberg, they needed to make the change. We believe in the talent. We need to adjust course, and we are entrusting this team to Jim Boylan to adjust it to his course. And the offseason moves that they made, yeah, they were underwhelming, but they were about helping out the talent that they had in-house already to provide support to Zach and Lowry so they could turn into star players. And they believed that Jim Boylan was the guy to get them there. Well, 20 games through the season, Jim Boylan and your best player, Zach LaVine, have a terrible relationship. Jim doesn't trust Zach. Zach doesn't trust Jim. And honestly, I'm surprised this team hasn't had a mutiny again already this season, because Boylan is constantly throwing his guys under the bus when he himself is getting outcoached every night. He's yanking guys to prove a point. He's done it to Zach. He's done it to Kobe White now in their game on Friday night. And he's offering no alternative plans and no solutions. It's the same losses every night, and it's the same explanations from Jim Boylan every night. And now we've gotten to a point where he has no answers. So he's like, you know, with a shit-eating grin on his face, quoting Field of Dreams. Well, the wins aren't coming, Jim. Well, yeah, we're trying to build something here. We're trying to build the foundational blocks. And, you know, if you build it, they will come. They referring to the wins. And a reporter having to say, well, Jim, they're not coming. They aren't coming. Why should we believe that they are coming? And he has had no follow-up answer to that follow-up question and looked annoyed that he had to answer that follow-up question when called out for, I'm sorry, but quoting some completely ridiculously non-related movie about baseball is not an answer for why are you not winning games right now. And then he said, well, we got to look at the things that we aren't doing well and do better at them, and look at the things that we are doing well and continue to get better at them. It's like, dude, that is not an answer. You're just spouting these, you know, vague, you know, like these vague platitudes about like, oh, well, you know, we got to trust the process. Keep building. Got to, you know, find our consistency and the wins will come. Not the way things are going, Jim. So this is where the Bulls are. 2.25 seasons after trading Jimmy Butler, they're stuck with talent that looks like it's not good enough to build around, and a coach who is not helping their players develop, but actually hindering their development. And continuing to make the Bulls a laughingstock with some of his post-game comments. I mean, the guy is becoming attached to the emoji of a clown on Bulls Twitter. And it's fair. It is open season on making fun of Jim Boylan for good reason. This guy is in way over his head and has nothing except unrelated, quote-unquote, inspiring lines from movies about sports. And he's a head fucking coach in the NBA. It's a joke. He's a joke, and the Bulls are a joke for backing him and extending his contract without so much as an interview or a phone call to any potential candidates to replace Fred Hoiberg. And now, the cherry on top of this shit Sunday that the Bulls find themselves in is that we know how much ownership protects John Paxson and see that he, in their eyes, can do no wrong. Paxson is smart enough at least to know that if they fire Jim now or before the season is over even, they are exposing themselves for their incompetence. Panic trading Zach or panic trading Lowry is a sidebar excuse for why they're losing. The chemistry with our personnel on the floor isn't right, so we're going to make a trade and try and change things up. Because that covers their asses at least a little bit. They are, at the end of the day, responsible if the players that they brought in a trade to start a new rebuild are failing. That is, at the end of the day, also on them. But it's less obvious to the immediate reaction of what's going on to trade the player and say the player's the issue, not the coach. Because if you say, we may have screwed the pooch there on the Jim Boylan hire, then you're admitting your own incompetence. And because Michael and Jerry Reinsdorf are so fiercely loyal to John Paxson, Paxson ain't going anywhere unless he resigns. Unless he steps down, admits that the Boylan hire was a mistake, and says, that's on me. This rebuild isn't going anywhere. I accept responsibility and accountability for that. I'm resigning. Because unless Paxson resigns, he's not going anywhere. We're hearing these rumors now that maybe Gar is on the hot seat a little bit. I'm hearing these rumors that maybe Doug Collins is trying to push out Gar and take Gar's job as the GM to become more, you know, fully involved than just his special advisor role right now. But even if that happens, how does firing Gar change anything? At this point, Gar is nothing but a scout and a figurehead. You know, maybe you get less obsession from, like, you know, Iowa products in the draft. But Fred was Gar's guy. You've already fired Gar's guy. So you can't put the blame of Jim Boylan on Gar. You can't put the blame of this rebuild failing on Gar. You can put a lot of other failings on Gar. Trades, drafts. But right now, the problems that exist in year three of this rebuild, firing Gar fixes none of them. Because you still have ownership blindly trusting John Paxson. You still have ownership and Paxson blindly trusting Jim Boylan, who is failing this roster. So what does firing Gar solve? Nothing. Firing Gar solves nothing. But other than trading a key piece of this roster, it's the only move they have. I mean, it isn't much of a move, but it's not the move that they actually should make, which is Michael Reinsdorf, because we know Jerry's, you know, only worried about winter meetings for baseball right now. Michael Reinsdorf needs to tell John, look, man, we don't want to fire you because you're John Paxson. And essentially, my dad said, you can have this job as long as you want it. But the one thing that the Reinsdorfs care about? Dollars in their pockets. Not winning basketball games. Dollars in their pockets. That's starting to take a hit. Attendance is down. Percentage of capacity filled is way down to 20th in the league. 20th. The Chicago freaking Bulls, a global brand, are 20th in the NBA in arena capacity filled. That's embarrassing. And it's finally starting to hit Reinsdorf's where they care, which is their wallets. So if Jerry and Michael collectively decide, man, this has gotten so bad, fans are actually finally, despite the billboard and despite all of their threats, finally really starting to tune out and to not show up and to spend less money on this team, when in years past and decades past, it didn't matter what we put on the floor, Bulls fans show up because they're insanely passionate. That might finally lead to a conversation where Michael says to John, it's time. We have to clean house and start over for real. The likelihood of that happening, I wish it were higher. The likelihood of John Paxson firing Jim Boylan and admitting that giving Boylan that extension was a mistake this season, I wish it were higher. Boylan's contract isn't that expensive, and they're only paying half of Fred's final year of his contract because of his Nebraska coaching job. They could, if they wanted to, fire Jim, bring in an interim, and say, all right, we're going to, you know, give the helm to Chris Fleming or Roy Rogers or whoever this for the rest of this season, so at least our players stop you know, hating their lives because Jim Boylan is their coach, and see if that fixes anything, or at least a couple of things, and then we'll actually conduct a coaching search this offseason. But before we conduct our coaching search, we're going to bring in new management. That is what should happen to fix this disgusting start through the first quarter of year three of a rebuild. But Bulls fans have no reason to believe that that is what will happen, because we know this organization all too well. Sad reality. Happy holidays, everybody. All right, well, that'll be it for today, now that I've completely depressed myself and probably most of you out there listening. Bulls going to try again. Try to get at least one win on this West Coast trip that comes to a conclusion tonight against the fairly unimpressive Sacramento Kings. But hey, if you can't beat the Warriors, what makes you believe you can beat the Sacramento Kings, a team that has twice as many victories as said Golden State Warriors? Another late tip-off tonight, 9 p.m. Central Time. You can catch me, John, and Big Dave on Outsiders following post-game live around, you know, I don't know, midnight, 12:30 a.m. Central Time. So I'll see you there for those of you brave souls who will watch this game and stay up late, despite fearing an outcome that is what we've come to expect, another loss. So until tomorrow, hopefully we'll have Jordan back on the mics with me. Matt Peck saying thanks, as always, for listening, Bulls fans. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving weekend. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter, Locked On Bulls, Bulls_Peck, Jordan C. Malley, and that text to voicemail line, always there for you, 331-979-1369. Until tomorrow, see you red, be good, peace out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com